I have given you pages 211 through 223, and that's chapter 18 and session number 22. All right, let's look on page 211 and read verse 1. After these things, after what things? What was chapter 17 about? Anybody remember? I didn't think you would remember that. I thought you would. About the great whore. Remember the great whore?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Okay, the great whore that was devoured. Okay. Right. After these things. So after he had gotten the vision of the great harlot, the great whore, and how she was devoured by her lovers, after that thing, I saw another angel. Now, come down from heaven having great power. Now, and the earth was lightened with his glory. Now, this angel had great power and lightened the earth. Who is it that said that? Maybe said something like, all authority or all power has been given to me. Okay, all right. And who said, I am the light of the world? All right. So this angel is a direct then link at least towards Jesus, okay? Now, it's more than just, well, can't say it that way. It's not only Jesus, but we'll see this as we move through, because let me just go ahead and throw it in there. But as he left, he said, now you are the light of the world, right? And the salt of the earth. And he says to his apostles, I'm giving you all authority. So what I'm wanting us to see, and I'm going ahead and saying it, but what I want you to see is that this is Jesus and his church, this angel thought here. The word power is the Greek word exousia, and it's always, nearly always, an exclusive use just in reference to Jesus and to those that he sent. Matthew 7:29, see at the very bottom on the left column? Matthew 7:29 says, for he taught them as one having authority, same Greek word, exousia, and not as the scribes. Matthew 28:18, and Jesus came and spake unto them, saying, all power, all exousia, is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Matthew 10:1, and when he had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them exousia. He gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease. Same word, same Greek word there, exousia. John 5:27, and hath given him authority, the same word, to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. So what I'm wanting us to see is the person, the angel, the messenger, with all authority is Jesus, but then he sent us. And the word angel, agalos, means messenger, sent ones. Drop down there to John 8:12. Then spake Jesus again unto them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. And did later Jesus say, of course we've already said that, in Matthew 5:14, that you are the light of the world, a city set on a hill. And when he says a city set on a hill, of course he's talking about his church. So John is saying that this angel is a reference to Jesus and his church. It's this that brings light into the world. It is this that has great power in the earth. Now I know sometimes we don't see the church that way, but that's the way God sees his church. God sees the church as power. God sees the church in authority. Look at Revelation 18:2. And he, this great angel, cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen. Double emphasis. Fallen. That's like when Jesus would say, verily, verily. Double emphasis. Is fallen. And is become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. Now let's get this verse here before we read verse 3. This Babylon, it's fallen, but yet it's still filled. It's fallen, but yet there's still something there. and it's full of devils, and it's full of foul spirits, and it's a prison or a cage for unclean things. Now, what I want us to see is that Babylon is Judaism. And, of course, that's always related to as Jerusalem. But Babylon is Judaism. And it says it's fallen, but yet it's still full of devils and foul spirits and a prison of the unclean. And I want to point out how God feels about Judaism throughout this lesson. This is kind of going to be a mainstream thought. This is how God feels about Judaism. It's fallen, but yet it exists, but yet it's full of devils and foul spirits and unclean. Now, how do I know that this is Jerusalem or that this is Judaism? Because it's already been referenced in the book of Revelation. It's always been identified in Revelation 11:8. In Revelation 11, it's talking there about the two witnesses, remember? We talked about those two witnesses being the Old Testament and New Testament. And so these two witnesses laid in the street, remember, and then they were resurrected. But it tells them the street in which it laid, or the city in which, in the street, the city which the street was in which they laid. Here it is. Revelation 18:8. Their bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which is figuratively called Sodom and Egypt, where also their Lord was crucified. So, where was that? What city was the Lord crucified?
Jerusalem.
So, it's already identified. We know the city and the temple that was supposed to be a dwelling and a righteous place now is a habitation of devils and foul spirits. This is what he's saying. The city, the Jerusalem, and the message of Judaism, which was supposed to be a light, now is full of darkness and devils. The city that was to be the habitation of the precious dove, the spirit, was instead a cage of hateful birds and vultures, you know, foul, unclean things. The city and the temple that was to house the Spirit of God housed instead every foul spirit. And Jesus said that it should be a house of prayer. Is that what he said? But they had made it what? A den of thieves. Let me show it to you. Matthew 21:13, and said unto them, it is written, my house should be called the house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. So this is how God is feeling now towards Judaism, toward this place. So go back to page 213, or go to page 213 in your notes. Look on the left column. Chapter Revelation 18 verse 4. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached into heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Now, before I read, I want to read that next paragraph, but before I do, come out of her, my people. Now, dispensational teaching, and I just got to kind of throw this in here. Dispensational teaching says that the rapture happens in chapter 4.
Yeah, they love that.
Okay, come up. Oh, you know, it says come up here. And so they take that as the rapture. But then, of course, we've showed you in chapter 11. In chapter 11, it says thrust in the sickle and reap. And there's a reaping and a harvest of the righteous. So, and I've told you my story, that I was teaching the book of Revelation along the lines of the dispensationalist, and I raptured everybody in the fourth chapter and said, well, maybe I'm wrong, it may be a mid-trib rapture, you know, so I raptured everybody in chapter 11. Or maybe there's two raptures, you know, I don't know. But when I got to this verse right here, when I hit this verse, I said, there is something wrong.
I don't know what they do with it.
Come out of her, my people. You know, and it's, I'm thinking, you know, wait a minute, there's a problem. You know, there's a problem. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out to you. It's a very difficult thing. It was this verse right here that really threw me into a tizzy and put me on a search to try to figure some other things out. What possibly else could this book be about? All right, let me read now that next paragraph under 18:5. By now, anyone who has read this far into this writing understands that this is not a book about the end of the world, our planet, but rather about the end of Moses and the beginning of Christianity. It is not about the rapture of the church, but about the overcoming church. The church was not raptured in chapter 4, pre-trib, nor chapter 14, mid-trib. This can be said with assurance because God's people are still in Babylon. Another voice from heaven said, "Come out of her, my people." Now the voice from heaven that said, "Come out of her, my people," did Jesus ever say anything like that? Did Jesus ever tell his people to get out of Dodge? Mm-hmm. He did, didn't he? Yeah. And you've heard it time and time again in our study. And so, yes, he did. Yes, he did. Now, I've got you those scripture references there in Matthew 24:15 down through 21, there 24:21. The one I want to read is Luke 21:20, and both of them are they're parallel. But I want to read Luke 21:20 at the bottom of that page and just read that whole section there. Because this is what Jesus said. He said, "Come out of her. Come out of her, my people." And this is what Jesus said. "And when you shall see Jerusalem," see who? See what? "When you shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Then let them which are in," where? In Judea. Not just Jerusalem, but this whole area. "Flee to the mountains, and let them which are in the midst of it depart out, and let not them that are in the countries enter thereinto. For these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe unto them that are with a child, because the rapture is about to happen, and you don't want to be held back by a baby, right? Is that what? "And to them that give suck," those that have infants, it's going to be tough on you, because this is a time of great tribulation. It's a time of great peril. And this is what he's really saying. It's not because the rapture is happening and it's going to be bad if you have a kid. "For there shall be great distress in the land and wrath upon this people." It's a great tribulation. "And they shall fall by the edge of the sword and shall be led away captive." Now, Jesus says, they shall fall by the edge of the sword. How much warfare all over the earth now do people do with swords? Jesus didn't know that though, did he? But did they do it in these days? Is this how they warred in these days? Yes, in the days of Jesus, yes. So he's talking about his time. "Shall fall by the edge of the sword and shall be led away captive, go into slavery, into all nations. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." And I've already told you what happened is when Jerusalem fell, there was 1 million people that died because of the battle, or either by the famine or by the people inside of Jerusalem killing each other. And there was 97,000, I think, that were taken away into slavery. Come down, skip the next paragraph, and come down to the next paragraph that says the message the church proclaimed. The message the church proclaimed from the years of AD 30 to AD 70 was, "Come out of her. Come out of Judaism." Now, did they or did they not? Is that true or not true? Did the church, was that the message that Peter preached? Was that the message that the apostles preached?
Christianity.
Right.
Yes.
Which would be come out of Judaism. That was the message they proclaimed. And I told you that this great angel was Jesus and his church. Right? Come out of her. Come out of Judaism. Save yourselves from this untoward generation. That's what Peter said. Remember Peter saying that on the day of Pentecost? He's preaching. He says, "You Jews, you guys of Jerusalem and Judea, listen to me. You better listen to me." And he goes on through there, and he comes down. He says, "Save yourselves from this untoward generation. Come out of her." People needed to be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ, separating from and dying to the Mosaic Law. The message was, neither is there salvation in any other, for there is none other name under heaven given under among men whereby we must be saved. Is that true? Is that the message? You can't be saved by Judaism. It was come out of her. Jerusalem, though religious, was unclean. In the eyes of the church, and in the eyes of Christianity, that was a death trap. It was going to come down. Jesus said it was. Jesus said, this thing's coming down. This temple's going to be taken apart stone by stone. Rome's going to come. It's going to encompass this city about. It's going to be so bad. It's going to be horrible. Get out of here. Get out of Judaism. It's a dying thing. And this is the this is the message that they proclaimed. Revelation 18:5 said, we've already read it, but here's what it said. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Now, this is an allusion. Like, I told you that John says, you know, if you'll follow the signs, then you'll find out what the book of Revelation is really about. And so this is a link, an allusion link, a sign that's going to take us to Sodom and Gomorrah. You remember when Abraham came and had supper, had dinner when God came with the two angels and had supper with Abraham? Remember that story in the Bible? All right, this is what was going on. This was in the conversation just before he shows up here. In Revelation 18, in Genesis chapter 18, this is what the Lord said concerning Sodom and Gomorrah. And the Lord said, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which is come unto me. And if not, I will know. So John says that that it had come up. He says that for her sins have reached unto heaven. So what John is giving us here is an allusion link that goes all the way back to Sodom and Gomorrah. So the judgment, much as came on Sodom and Gomorrah, is going to come on Jerusalem. This is what John is saying here. Look at page 215. Troy, will you go open that door over there, please? And I think it's getting a little warm in here. And let's left column, Revelation 18:7. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her, for she saith in her heart, I sit a queen, and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day. Notice that. Come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned, notice that, with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. Let's read this paragraph. She said in her heart, I sit a queen, and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Jerusalem thought that her covenant with the Lord God made her a queen. She knew that he was alive, thus she was no widow. He would deliver her, she thought. She was deceived. She only glorified herself. She only gratified herself. That was what she said. However, what the angel said about her was far different. Babylon was going to go down. And if Jerusalem is Babylon, and it is, but if it is, then it's going to go down. And it's going to go down in one day. Now, we've talked about the day of the Lord back in chapter 1, verse 11. John says, I was in the Spirit on the Lord's day. And we talked about that some then, I think it was Revelation 1:10 actually. It's not a literal day. When the Bible talks about the day of the Lord, it's not talking about a literal day. It's a time referred to in scriptures over and over as lights out. It's a lights out deal. That's what he's really talking about. So look at the scriptures on the right side of page 215. And again, if you want to study the day of the Lord, so many pages I gave to that, I overkilled it. But it was just because the day of the Lord to most people is a good thing. You know, they think it's the rapture or they think it's something like that. In reality, that's not at all what it's in reference to. It's not a good thing at all. Joel 2:31 says, "The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrible day of the Lord come." Does that sound like a good thing to you? Isaiah 13:6, "Howl ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It shall come as a destruction from the Almighty." Isaiah 13:9, "Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, cruel, both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate." And Jesus is talking, remember back in the Olivet Discourse, the abomination of desolation. And then Luke tells us, of course, it's the days of vengeance when Jerusalem is encompassed about. "And he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it." Malachi 4:5, "Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord." Acts 2:20, "The sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and notable day of the Lord come." That's Peter quoting Joel. And then in 2 Peter 3:10, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, and in the which the heavens shall pass away with great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. In other words, it's lights out for a society. The day of the Lord is a reference to lights out. The moon, the sun, all these scrolls and the stars fall from heaven. All of these are references to the day of the Lord. It's lights out for a society. Let's read that paragraph. "As one can obviously see, it is the time prophesied by prophets of both Old and New Testaments. Many of the above references are allusion links that John used throughout this revelation. It is the end of the age, or the world," Matthew 24:3, King James Version, "for Judaism." Let me read that sentence again. "It is the end of the age for Judaism, as was then known." Isaiah 2:12 through 3:1 talks about that. Just going to read this verse. "For the day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon every one that is proud and lofty." Now, what did Babylon say? She says, "I'm the queen," right? She's glorified herself. She lived deliciously. But what happens is, "The day of the Lord of hosts shall be upon every one that is proud and lofty, and upon every one that is lifted up. And he shall be brought low. For behold, the Lord of hosts, doth take away from Jerusalem and from Judea the stay and the staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water." In other words, famine. Now, so who is the day of the Lord to come on? Jerusalem. Turn over, page 216. Right column, let's see, come down to the 1, 2, 3, 4, in counting the scripture references, come down to the fourth paragraph. Specifically to Jerusalem, the following passage was given. "Then as today, people thought they wanted the day of the Lord. Today we call this day the rapture. This is when the just are taken and the unjust are left, or so we think and are told. The ones wanting this could have a huge surprise, as do those of Jerusalem. Hearken to the words of the Lord." Amos 5:18. "Woe unto you that desire the day of the Lord. To what end is it for you? The day of the Lord is darkness and not light." Every once in a while I'll hear these preachers on television, and I love technology, but I'll hear them, you know, I'm going to leave that alone a moment. And one time I was listening to one, and he says, "I can't wait for the rapture. And what I want to happen is that when the Lord starts taking me up, I hope he just gives me a little hang time."
Last week we were watching those Friends Behind series, and they were good people and the people that they were leading didn't know what was going on. But then they had a chance later to, you know, become better.
Yeah, I know.
You
know.
They rebuilt the temple.
Yeah, sure they did. But my point is that verse tells me, don't want this. Don't want this to come. I don't, if it were so, I wouldn't want it to come. You know, it's like we've got this sadistic mentality that those damned old sinners, you know, burn them up, God. We're not here to burn up sinners. We're here to save them, right? We're here to reach them. Yeah, so he said, I hope the Lord gives me a little hang time so I can tell all of those that don't believe this. Yeah. And it was, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, you're smarter than this. This is a very, very intelligent person too. But anyhow, those things get me. That when, even if it were so, even if I did believe that way, you know, you're not supposed to want that to happen. There's something wrong when we want that to happen. I mean, those are souls. Those are people. And you know, Jesus wasn't that way at all. You know, he wept over Jerusalem, knowing what was going to happen to him, but he still wept over them. And we're going to read that verse in just a little while. But anyway, I wanted you to see that. You know, I wanted you to see, woe unto you that desire the day of the Lord. That's not a good thing to want. Come on down to Amos 5:21 there. He says, I despise your feast days, and I will not smell in your solemn assemblies. Though you offer me burnt offerings and your meat offerings, I will not accept them, neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat beast. Now you said that in their movie that they rebuilt the temple. Now what were they going to do with this temple? Were they going to have animal sacrifices? Well, you just turned the page. Huh? you use the remote. Well, see, that's what. Why would you build a temple if you don't reinstitute animal sacrifices? That's what the temple was there for, right? I mean, that was the reason. That was the purpose of the temple. And of course, Ezekiel, in his revelation of the temple, that's what they do. They reinstitute animal sacrifices. Now, they don't tell you all that stuff in their doctrine, but they have to if they're going to rebuild the temple, because that's what the temple was there to do. But what God says right here is, I hate it. Is that what he said? What does verse 21 say? Amos 5:21. I despise your feast days. Why would he want them to rebuild it and reinstitute that stuff? He goes on down in verse 23. Take thou away from me the noise of your songs. I will not hear the melody of thy vowels. You know, he doesn't want that stuff. He doesn't want Judaism praising him. He doesn't want that sacrifice. It's an abomination to him. It stinks to him. Come down to verse 27. Therefore will I cause you to go into captivity beyond Damascus, saith the Lord, whose name is the God of hosts. Let's read that next paragraph. The Lord said, I despise your feast. Neither did he enjoy their songs. Their worship was nothing more than idol worship of images which they made for themselves. They would go into captivity. Jerusalem did this for a final time in AD 70. Now, if you want to study the day of the Lord, all of these pages, many, many pages and verse references and all of those things are in here. I think when I had gotten to this, that I had never really studied the day of the Lord in this depth. And so I spent a lot of time just researching it and putting stuff in here. There's all sort of information for you to find out what the day of the Lord is. Turn over to page 217. Right column. Come down to Revelation 18:11. And the merchants, now this whole section is about the merchants or merchandising done in Jerusalem. And the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buyeth their merchandise anymore. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet and twine wood and all manner vessels of ivory and all manner of vessels of most precious wood and the brass and the iron and the marble and the cinnamon and odors. How would you say that, Shirley? Okay, and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beast and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. And the fruits that thy soul lusteth after are departed from thee. Now that's important. The fruits that thy soul lusteth after are departed from thee. And all things which they dainty and goodly are departed from thee, and thou shalt find them no more at all. The merchants of these things which were made rich by her shall stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing, and saying, Alas, alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet. Again, what colors were the temple, basically? Purple and scarlet. Okay, there you go. And scarlet, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. For in 1 hour so great riches is come to naught. And every shipmaster and all the company and ships and the sailors and as many as traded by sea stood afar off and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, that's important, saying, What city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, Alas, alas, the great city wherein we were made rich. That's important. They didn't cry and weep because people were dying. They cried and weep because they couldn't get rich off of her anymore. All that had ships in the sea reason of her costliness, for in 1 hour she is made desolate. Let's keep reading here. The tremendous trade and economic center that Jerusalem was is overlooked today. This can quickly be quickly adjusted in our thinking when we remember that three times every year, every Jewish family came to Jerusalem for three feasts. I don't know if I said that correctly, read that correctly. Anyway, three times every year, every family came to Jerusalem for a feast, for three feasts. Yeah, I did do it right. The people were to save a portion of their tithe for this journey, and with it they could purchase whatsoever thy soul lusteth after. Is that what? What now? Okay, who's alrighty there. That's a good one. Well, he's, yeah, I guess it was okay. I'll take that. That's good. Good. Glad you saw that. It is to this passage. Yes, you'll be whatsoever. It is to this passage the great angel makes allusion. Now, remember what he said. You know, the things that your soul lusteth after, that's where was that at? I pointed it out to you when we were reading through that stuff. All right, now I'm going to read this passage in just a second. But you've heard the teaching on the tithe, or most of us have. But the teaching on the tithe, there's three kinds of tithes, basically. There is the tithe that we're very familiar with, that the Lord gets the first fruit of. Then there's another tithe that we're supposed to give unto ourselves, and we're supposed to buy whatever we want with it. And then there's a third type of tithe, which is the alms tithe. So these are all spelled out for us in Deuteronomy 12 and 14. Now this tithe here that we're talking about that they took to Jerusalem three times a year to three different feasts is what we're talking about here in Deuteronomy 14, 25. Then shalt thou turn it into money. This is the tithe. They would take the animals or the corn or the grain or whatever they had. And the Bible tells them if it's too far to take your animals or your corn or your grain, then convert it to money and take the money and go. And this is what he says. Then shalt thou turn it into money and bind up the money in thine hand and shalt go unto the place which the Lord thy God shall choose, which was Jerusalem, and thou shalt bestow that money on whatsoever thy soul lusteth after. That's exactly what John is referencing. And this is the thought. Lusteth after for oxen or for sheep or for wine or for strong drink or for whatsoever, not whosoever, but for whatsoever thy soul desireth. And thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice, thou and thine household. Your whole family going to do this. So three times a year, the point is that three times a year, a Jewish family went to Jerusalem and spent a lot of money. It was a center of trade. It was a large, if not the largest one in this whole region. And so it was a major trade area. Jerusalem was major. Let's see, I got something I want to say here. Jerusalem was a major merchandising city, if not the major merchandising city in this area. Every Jew came to Jerusalem. But all of a sudden, it ended. It made the merchants rich, but then all of a sudden it ended, and for over 2,000 years, there was no merchandising at all. And then John said it burned. Remember I pointed out that to you, that he said it burned. In Revelation 18:18, that's what it says. And it says, and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? So in Revelation 18:18, it's burning. Now, Josephus talked about the entire area being burned, but especially he emphasized Jerusalem. So let's go to page 210. No, that's not right. Must be 220. I must have hit the wrong 18. 219. Go to 219. I want to just get a couple of these quotes. I don't want to read all this and wear you out. But the quotes on 218 are also quotes from Josephus about the burning. I just want to read two of these, though. On the left column, let's read that first one, where it starts up there. Accordingly, as the people were now slain, the holy house was burnt down. This is the temple. And the city was on fire. There was nothing further left for the enemy to do. Nor was there any place in the city that had no dead bodies in it. But what was entirely covered with those that were either killed by the famine or the rebellion. And as was full of the dead, and all was full of the dead bodies of such as had perished, neither by the sedition or by the famine. Well, I didn't read that very well, but the thought is the temple was on fire, houses were on fire, bodies were being burned. Go down to the next quote. So he gave orders to the soldiers. This would have been Titus. So he gave orders to the soldiers both to burn and plunder the city, who did nothing indeed that day, but on the next day they set fire to the repository of the archives, to everything, to the council house and to the place called whatever that is. The lanes also were burnt down, as were also those houses that were full of dead bodies of such as were destroyed by famine. In other words, the whole place was set on fire. So we know this happened. All I'm showing you here is that when Babylon fell, when Jerusalem fell, the things that John is saying here specifically fit to that place. Revelation 18:20, come down to where it starts in a couple of paragraphs below where we stopped reading. Rejoice over her, thou heaven, and ye holy apostles and prophets, for God hath avenged you on her. With the destruction of the religious system that killed the Lord and murdered the saints, heaven did rejoice. The holy apostles rejoice. The prophets rejoice. The reason for the rejoicing was because God hath avenged the apostles and prophets. The murdering system that tried to destroy the church was itself destroyed. Go up to Revelation 18:21, right column, top page. The verse says, and a mighty angel took up a stone, like a great millstone, and cast it into the sea, saying, thus with violence shall that great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. What about this millstone? What does he throw? What's it like he throws? The angel took a stone like a great millstone. Did Jesus ever say anything about a millstone? What did he say? I think he said something like, and if anyone causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it'd be better for him to be thrown into the sea. And where was this millstone thrown in Revelation 18:21? To the sea. Yeah, with a large millstone tied around his neck. Was Judaism offensive? Did it try to stop Christianity? Yeah, it did. Judaism was offending. It killed Christians. It killed the Christ. It did all it could to stop the kingdom of God. John links it to the very words of Jesus in the book of Revelation. He links it to what Jesus is quoted saying in Mark 9:42. John said it shall be found no more at all. Now what does that mean? No more at all. Look on page 220. Left column, one, two, third paragraph down, the thought of found no more at all does not mean it would not exist any more than literal Babylon was found no more. The meaning is that as the wife of God, the covenant people, it shall be found no more at all. The house was laid desolate. The temple was destroyed. It will never be renewed. A new covenant bride, the church, made herself ready. Drop down to Revelation 18:23. And the light of the candle shall shine no more at all in thee. And the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy merchants, were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. The light of Judaism was put out. This is what he's saying. No voice of the bridegroom or the bride. In other words, the marriage is terminated. In the house, there's no more voice. The voice of the bride's not there. The voice of the bridegroom's not there. Neither are there anymore. The temple is down. No sound of music or joy at all. No more. In other words, covenant's ended. Divorce. But who did Jesus say is now the light of the world? Yeah. And remember in Galatians where it talks about the Jerusalem that is and the Jerusalem that is above. One is likened unto Hagar and one is likened unto Sarah. One has the promise and one is the bondwoman. And so as you start linking these thoughts together, you kind of start seeing something. So let me ask you though something. Let me ask you a question. Other than the church that we know, because this is what we're taught, but other than the church, who has ever been the voice of the bride? Or who should have been the voice of the bride? Other than the church?
Jerusalem should have been.
Judaism, right. Jerusalem. But it's heard no more. Other than that, you see, that kind of tips you off right there of what he's really talking about. You say, other than the church, the only person that we ever find in Scripture that the Lord considered married to, was a symbolic of being married to, was Jerusalem, was Judaism. I want to show you something. The Lord here speaking to Israel says in Jeremiah 16:9, "For this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says, before your eyes and in your days I will bring an end to the sounds of joy and gladness and to the voices of the bride and bridegroom in this place." Just about a quote from what we're reading, right? Did you all see what I was doing? Okay, here's Jeremiah 16:9, right here. Got it? Let me read it again. "For this is what the Lord Almighty, thy God of Israel, says, before your eyes and in your days I will bring an end to the sounds of joy and gladness and in the voices of the bride and the bridegroom in this place." Verse 10 says, "When you tell these people all this and they ask you, why has the Lord decreed such a great disaster against us? What wrong have we done? What sin have we committed against the Lord our God? Then say to them, it is because your fathers forsook me, declares the Lord, and followed other gods and served and worshiped them. They forsook me and did not keep my law." John nearly quotes the passage in Jeremiah. He nearly quotes it in the book of Revelation. He nearly does that. Go to page 221. What I want us to see is that this voice of the bride could have only been the people of Israel or people of Judaism. Look at verse 24, very bottom left column. And in her was found the blood of the prophets and of the saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. This verse gives clear understanding as to who this Babylon was. Jesus Christ, in his last confrontation with the Pharisaical system in the temple, only days prior to his crucifixion, said this thing. Go over on to on the right column up to Matthew 23. I just want to read this quote. You're very familiar with it, but this is what this verse is talking about, and this just lets us know who this Babylon really is. Jesus says to them, "You serpents, you generation of vipers, how can you escape the damnation of hell? Wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them you shall kill and crucify, and some of them you shall scourge in your synagogues and persecute them from city to city, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, son of Archias, whom you slew between the temple and the altar. Verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and you would not. Behold, your house is left to you desolate." So who do you think Babylon is or was? What does the evidence prove? Do you think it's something that's going to happen? Or do you think that it's something that has happened? Yeah. What does God think about Judaism? How did you? I don't like it. Does it stink to him? Does he want to hear the sound of their songs? Does he want that temple rebuilt? No. Together, we can change the world. Yes, together.